from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Mega billions chasing mobile computing this week. Verizon, Vodafone, Microsoft, Nokia, all doing big, big deals. It's about wireless communication, phone calls, yes, but much, much more. All the apps you're driving on your smartphone and a tidal wave beyond. About competing with Google and Apple and where the world is going. This hour On Point, chasing the wave of mobile computing, we'll look at what all those billions are after. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you already inseparable from your mobile devices? What do they see coming in mobility? What do you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Birmingham, Alabama, is Brian Barrett, managing editor of the technology blog Gizmodo. Brian, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
$130 billion for the 45% of Verizon Wireless that it didn't already own. Does that make that thing worth a quarter trillion dollars in total? And what makes it so valuable for Verizon to go after that chunk that Vodafone, the British firm, owned?
That's right. Well, you know, it sounds like a gigantic number, and it is, frankly, a gigantic number. But it does make sense if you're Verizon and you're looking at your numbers and you realize that two-thirds of your revenue comes from wireless profit. It's a major source of money for them, and they only see it getting bigger. And I think they see it, you know, in smartphone adoption, more and more people buying smartphones, but also they're looking beyond the smartphone. They're looking to hospitals. They're looking to education centers, places where big data is going to be very important, and where Verizon is going to be providing access to it.
So when we say wireless, and that once meant mainly a phone in your hand and once meant mainly talking on it, and then the smartphone and all those apps and connections, now you're talking about wireless communication, jumping even right off the phone, the smartphone, sort of out into the world.
Exactly. You know, I think you're already seeing so many people's televisions hook up to the internet. You know, you've got tablets, a huge proliferation of tablets. Other connected devices, wearable technology is going to be very big in the future. People are going to be wearing smartwatches and Google Glass and all of these things. At least that's what Verizon is betting. And frankly, it seems like we're heading that way. You can get a lot done over your home Wi-Fi connection, but the more that we're out and about, the more that we're using these devices that are designed to go with us, the more we're going to be feeding into Verizon's bottom line.
So presumably, I mean, $130 billion, you say not so much, but it's the second biggest amount ever paid in an acquisition anywhere, anytime. Verizon must see a huge increase in volume of wireless traffic coming. I mean, after all, that's where their bread and butter is.
Well, they absolutely must, but it's also, you know, put in the context of the original Verizon. You know, Verizon was created originally when Bell Atlantic merged with Vodafone. So Vodafone is one of the original stakeholders, and that original deal back in 1999 was a $70 billion deal.
Mm-hmm.
So you give 14 years of growth to that, and you see how that number in context. Well, you know, given the growth that the wireless has had since the late 90s, which has been obviously almost exponential, and then you look to forecasting the future, all of these new devices coming online, you know, the more that we're streaming videos to our phones, those are incredibly bandwidth heavy. That's a lot of data. That's a lot of data plans that are going to be signing up through Verizon.
And the takeoff of mobile computing right there. Let's turn to Microsoft and Nokia for a minute here. Microsoft kind of left in the dust by Apple and Google on the smartphone, mobile computing front. I mean, after all, they were the great pioneers of the desktop PC. They owned that. Is this the concession going out to buy Nokia, famous for its mobile stuff, that the desktop is done?
You know, some people have said it's that the desktop is done. I think it's more that Microsoft sees mobile as an integral component with the desktop. I think it sees, you know, especially with Windows 8, we already see a similar look across the desktop and mobile, the tablets, the phones, the desktop all look the same. And so I think that they think that by bringing Nokia in-house, they can unify that even tighter. I think the desktop's always going to be there for professional needs, for, you know, content creation. I think that it's still very difficult to do these things on mobile devices. I think, though, that Microsoft saw that, you know, it was losing more and more ground to Apple and Android. It didn't have a lot of ground to begin with. And so this is sort of, you could call it a last-ditch effort to bring everything in-house and make one more big push, just to make sure that there are still Windows Phone devices in the future.
To get in the game, Windows Phone out there, but not much momentum. Here's Microsoft CEO outgoing Steve Ballmer talking with CNBC Tuesday from Finland, Nokia's home, of course, about Microsoft's acquisition of Nokia's mobile phone business.
We're certainly very focused in on driving and accelerating Windows Phone momentum. And we think the way to do that with the greatest innovation agility, the clearest message to the market, one brand and one voice behind Windows Phone, and really being agile from a sales and marketing perspective is to acquire Nokia.
Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer. Brian, with all that Microsoft history and money behind them, is it clear that as the world goes mobile, Microsoft's going to be able to make that leap, clear the bar, and be there as a real competitor with Google and Apple and all the rest?
You know, I don't know that it is, unfortunately. Windows Phone is a great product. It's had a hard time getting a lot of recognition. Windows 8 tablets have not taken off. And, you know, as much as Steve Ballmer understandably frames it as being a more efficient way to get the message out there, you can also look at this acquisition as Microsoft throwing its most important hardware partner, really its only significant hardware partner, Nokia, a lifeline. Nokia's financials have been terrible lately. There's no indication that they were going to be able to keep up producing phones at all. Microsoft has already been throwing them hundreds of millions of dollars a year to try to support their hardware business. So really what they see in Nokia is their steadfast partner that was maybe about to go under.
Well, I mean, maybe you're right, but presumably what they really, really care about is Microsoft's own future. I mean, what, Android is now 51% of U.S. smartphone sales, iPhone 43, 44%, Microsoft 3.5% with its Windows-based phone. They are not in the game.
Oh, absolutely. But without Nokia, they would have probably 0%. So by keeping Nokia alive, they're able to keep their future alive. And, you know, I think there's a chance. It's a very good product if they can, you know, make sure that it really it works off of the desktop and the tablet well. If they can get the message out there that, you know, you don't have to be locked into these Android and iOS ecosystems, which I think a lot of people feel as though they are because they own so many apps already, they don't have to buy them all over again, then they do have a chance. And they're certainly going to put as much money and effort behind it as anyone else in the world could or would.
Brian, look 10 years down the road. Is there anything that's not going to be wired on in the system, you know?
Oh my goodness! I don't know. I've still got an old Olivetti typewriter in my living room, and I'm hoping I can keep that off the grid. But otherwise, pretty much everything we're doing has got to be online. It already, to some extent, is. You know, especially you see Google Glass coming along. It's just sort of a project right now, a whimsy. But that's going to be an actual thing pretty soon. That people are going to buy at a reasonable price. So, you know, from your glasses to your phone to your watch, everything will be at least available in a wireless version, and it's probably up to us to decide where to draw the line.
That means mobile. Brian Barrett is managing editor at Gizmodo. Brian, thank you for calling, for being
thanks
with
so
us.
Much.
Thanks so much. Joining me now from New York is Joe Brown. He's New York editor for Wired magazine. Joe, thank you for joining us.
Nice to see you, Tim. I guess I'm not seeing you. Nice to be here.
Tom Ashbrook here with you, Joe. So
sorry,
these are very big numbers. And, of course, Brian's right. Telecommunications deals in big numbers. But this looks like as big a signal as you could ever hope for between these two, that the whole thing's going mobile, that the gates are open and through we go.
Well, yeah, I mean, like Brian said, this is a lot of Microsoft trying to secure their future in mobile and also make sure that their most important hardware partner stays afloat. But more than that, it's getting on board with the winning strategy. If you look at Apple, who was the really early leader with mobile, especially in smartphones we're talking about, they controlled their market by controlling hardware and software. Android did the same thing when they bought Motorola. And now you're seeing Microsoft take that same approach by bringing their hardware partner in-house. It allows you to have a much tighter control of both products from the end user experience. It's really, really important.
Where do you see the weight of computing going for consumers in this country, or even where it is today? I mean, it was on the desktop, and Microsoft was king. Apple was an also-ran. Now there's so much mobile, and Microsoft is the also-ran there. Where's the weight of this going as we step forward?
Microsoft, as Barrett, again, Brian said, you know, has a really strong history in desktops, but that's not the direction that consumer technology is going in right now. It's about wireless. If you look at kids, what they're using, they're not hauling around big towers. They're hauling around phones. And if you look at a way of extending internet coverage, and internet is not just about cats and viral videos. It's about finding places to sell your crops or places to, you know, buy something that you desperately need for a village doctor. If you're looking at extending the internet into places where there is not already a technological infrastructure, it's far more efficient to set up some cell towers than to haul in some telephone poles and run lines. Wireless technology isn't just important for the way that the developing world is moving, but it's also important for the way that the developed world is moving.
Is a desktop PC going to look as antique as Brian Barrett's Olivetti typewriter still sitting in his living room?
No, there's eventually, probably yes. But I think that might be beyond the scope of a radio program, frankly.
We don't think anything is beyond the scope of a radio program.
I agree. Frankly. And I think one of the most sort of important aspects of the internet is how well vocal communication in terms of, you know, talking and also podcasting and just the ways of bringing people together in the way that radio has always done is one of the sort of strengths of it. But if you're looking at making a desktop computer obsolete, I think you're going to, as Brian said, see a lot of professional users holding on to the ability to have really, really strong, powerful computers in large packages going forward. There are some things you can't have a battery for.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the giant mega-billion-dollar deals between Verizon, Vodafone, Microsoft, and Nokia, and what it's all about. The explosion in mobile computing, the lifestyle and spending changes that come with it, always-on connectedness, and, of course, the competition with Google and Apple. Joe Brown is with us, New York editor of Wired magazine. And with me in the studio right now, David Gertzoff Richard. He's professor of social media and marketing at Emerson College, founder of Big Fish, a marketing and communications firm. David, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
It's always great to be here.
So, big money. Yeah, there's going to be PCs there for professionals and at home for a long time. But what do they see on the horizon about the volume of mobile computing that's going to go on that drives these big values on these buys?
I think what they're seeing is that we're just all seeing the tip of the iceberg here. If you look at where we were 10, 15 years ago and where we are now, it's just about everybody has a mobile phone, right?
And not just a phone, but many a smartphone with everything that comes along with that.
More than half of the U.S. has a smartphone. And so what they're looking at is the next 15 years. What is mobile going to look like 15 years from now? And what I think everybody is seeing and where Brian and Joe have already started taking us is these ubiquitous devices. And I'm not talking about tablets and phones and things like this. I'm talking about like salt shakers and pill bottle caps and doorbells.
Embedded with a wireless signal capacity that's going to talk to you, to your smartphone or some control panel or whatever. Everything talking to everything else.
Exactly. And so think about like, a perfect example is the doorbell. It's something so dumb and stupid and hasn't been innovated in forever. And now there is this a bunch of companies coming out. DoorBot is one of them, where you ring the doorbell and it calls you on your phone and it snaps.
I ring the doorbell and it calls you. I mean, somebody rings my doorbell, it calls me and does what?
It calls you and it establishes a video conference so you can see who's ringing your doorbell. You could be at work, someone rings your doorbell, and you can answer it and see who's ringing.
That's wild. I'm not in the den. I'm not in the basement. I'm somewhere else, but I know who's standing at my front door.
Exactly. And so that eats data, even though it's at home, mm-hmm. it's connecting to you while you're out, mm-hmm. right? And so that is going to eat up data. And that's what these guys are looking at, right? So
That multiplied times 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 different applications.
Take everything in your house and make it wireless and then have it connect to your phone or your watch or your Google Glass, whatever it's going to be that we're talking about, sort of this next generation of device.
Need milk, stop by the store, all that jazz.
Exactly.
And on we go. I mean, we asked on Facebook, we said to our listeners, how much of your life is running off a mobile device now? And there's such a range of responses. I mean, Janet said, none. I have a prepaid phone I bought for $5 at a yard sale. Okay. Janet, you may not be the future here. I don't know. Christine, I will never do my banking on my phone. Well, you may not, but a lot of people are tiptoeing over that way already. But then Mike says, too much, I suppose, of his life already running off his mobile device. I'm sure we'll have implants in the not-so-distant future. Not a pro or con statement, just a fact that wetware is coming soon. I mean, people even anticipating, David, this stuff getting sort of punched right into us.
Sure. You know, if you start with the simple things that you always have with us, your wallet, your keys, your glasses, these are going to probably be the first things. And we're already seeing this.
Wireless.
Wireless. So, you know, Starbucks has a Starbucks app, right? And you can buy coffee with your phone.
Mm-hmm.
There's now key and lock systems where you can open and gain access to your house or your office with your mobile phone. So you don't need to have keys with you. And so that's going to be the first step that we're seeing. And then it's just going to exponentially spread out from there.
Wetware, I mean, that means something what's surgically implanted or attached or in us.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of futurists, they look at different technology advancements and how they overlap with each other. So we're already seeing right now people like bionic eyes and this sort of thing. So, you know, having the...
Or monitors of heart rate or blood pressure. I don't know. Is that there, coming?
It's all there. Right? And so, you know, does your heart rate monitor, which now there are apps that, you know, can connect to your phone, you know, these things all can overlap. And before you know it, you have biometrics, you know, overlaid with mobile, with, you know, wireless connectivity going back to your house. There's, you know, we haven't even talked about the cloud and, you know, having all of your data out someplace that you can access through any one of these devices.
I don't know if it's all a good idea or a bad idea, but clearly these big companies see it coming. Like gangbusters, given the prices they're paying for these companies. Joe Brown, David Gersoff, Richard, stand by. Let's get our listeners in here. Chicago, Tyler is calling. Hi, Tyler. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. I was just calling to let you guys know my name's Tyler. I walked across the United States. I hiked across the United States in 2011. I carried a smartphone with me, and it was just shocking what kind of capabilities you have, even in the middle of nowhere. I expected to be, you know, out in the middle of nowhere and feeling very vulnerable, but with a smartphone with you, it's basically like carrying an office around with you. It's pretty intense.
So you were not Jack Kerouac, on the road, unplugged from everything, just looking at the stars. What were you connected to as you made your hike across the country, Tyler?
Well, I kind of expected to have that kind of a disconnected feeling, but it was not like that at all. I used my phone, obviously, for phone, but... I was able to use it for mapping, to know where I was going, to get information about places I was about to walk to.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to take and share pictures, obviously. I ran a website, tylergolson.com, basically from my phone. I was able to, you know, continue paying my student loans, sadly. it was essentially like being at home, except, you know, in the sunlight.
So is this good or bad? I mean, you were the ultimate sort of out-on-the-road man walking across the country, and still you were wired in.
Yeah, I don't know if it's good or if it's bad. I think it just is. I think it just is, but it's not going to change, I don't think. I think that's the way everything's headed. I mean, even desktops. Everything will be just essentially mobile with peripheral devices so you can type easier and things like that.
Tyler, you were as mobile as they get while hiking across the country. Tyler from Chicago, I appreciate your call. I mean, Joe Brown, we've got a listener online here. Mad Mark, you know, goes all the way back to the adventures of Buckaroo Banzai, back to 1984, where good old Buckaroo made the, Mark says, a humorously simple observation that wherever you go, there you are. But in a wireless mobile computing era, Joe, that's not necessarily true. Yes, you are wherever you are, but you're a lot of other places as well. There's our Tyler walking across the country and paying his student loans somewhere and in touch in all kinds of ways.
Yeah, and I think that what Tyler said about not good, not bad, but is really a great attitude to have towards this. You know, you have to think about what happened when the first people got on a commercial airline and flew across an ocean. Maybe they were thinking, oh, we're missing the experience of the salt air.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're thinking, oh, if man was meant to fly, he would have been born with wings. Mm. Who knows? But technological change is what makes humans humans. I mean, we, instead of adapting to the environment, adapt the environment to us. And yeah, maybe now the new reality is that it's not wherever you are, that you can be somewhere else. I can be halfway across the country with my wife when she's on a business trip. I can be in the living room with my grandfather, who's in an old age home. I mean, I think this is the magic of telecommunications. We're really creating something that fills, I think, a lot more of a need than a robotic vacuum cleaner. We're creating a way to bring the world together, to make it smaller, and to learn more about each other. This wouldn't be possible if you weren't putting cell phones in the hands of everybody across the world, or as many people as want them.
David, what about the psychosocial changes here, the changes in presentness?
Being there.
Be here now, but also be everywhere else, because if Verizon's right, if Microsoft's right, never mind Google and Apple, we're you know, wirelessly wired to the max.
It's amazing to watch this, how human behavior or societal behavior, at least here in the U.S., is adapting, and how quickly it's adapting to this connected world. How, you know, a couple years ago, the idea of tweeting, of texting someone for business, or, you know, tweeting someone was just, you know, so far off and was actually looked at as, you know, why would you do that? And now the question is, why wouldn't you do that? Like, how you know, if you need to get information to me quickly, text me.
I mean, and just in business terms, you know, in 2007, Nokia had 48% of the cell phone market, was worth $10 billion more than Apple. 5 years later, they had 3% of that market. And, you know, they're worth a pittance of what Apple's worth. These are rapid changes. Ariel is calling from Worcester, Massachusetts. Ariel, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, great show, Tom. I wanted to let you know that I'm right now on a mobile device listening to your program. And I wanted to make 2 points, if I may.
Yeah.
One is, today with mobile devices, the consumer has a choice for thousands of apps that make their lives a lot better. Data is faster and cheaper to send around. Now, the other thing is loyalty with businesses. The previous person that just spoke, he talked about businesses using text. But you can walk just by a store, and they will send you push notification with a discount offer to you based on a loyalty program you might have signed up to. So no more cards on your keychain. That's one. So much faster. And let's say you put a message, you had a problem with the company. Customer service today is rapid. It's automatically. You can get the reply from a company in a matter of minutes, straight to your phone. So our ability to communicate with one another is faster, but it's our productivity. Most of people today start shopping or start learning about a company, about a brand, through their mobile device.
Ariel, do you think Microsoft can make a play in this field, or is it too late? Is it toast on this front?
You know what, Tom? We're really at the infancy of this. If you think about back in 2009, only a few years back, there weren't many mobile applications, and there were barely any platforms for advertising online. I mean, online on your mobile device. This is a brand new market, and just think about how long it's taken a lot of businesses to understand the use of social networking and social media. So too do the big corporations need to understand how do you push ads that will work on a much smaller advertising area. You're shrinking the advertising area, but it's much more direct. And that's why I mentioned loyalty apps.
Yeah.
These are great. There are companies like Belly out in Chicago. They're doing some great stuff. There's out of New York, another company, something Loyal Blocks, I think it's called.
That is, you walk by, they know you're there because you're wireless. Tuned up, and boom, they're shipping you offers that may take some getting used to. On the other hand, there may be a bargain in people's hands. Ariel, I appreciate your call. We're looking at the big mega-billion-dollar deals between Verizon and Vodafone and Microsoft and Nokia and the mobile computing that justifies all those big numbers. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. David, we're hearing, like, out of Shanghai already, maybe in the U.S. too, but stores that are basically sort of shouting at you as you go by because they recognize you're there because of your wireless device. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, hey, half off if you walk in here right now. We know you like, I don't know, vanilla. Have vanilla.
Mm. Yeah, they can push coupons to you. They can you can do 2-for-1 deals, all sorts of things. And so, I think as the caller was saying, we're at the infancy of this. What from a bigger picture, when you're looking at these mega deals, it's not so long ago that there was this device called the BlackBerry, which owned the marketplace.
Yeah.
And no one thought that
our smartphone,
would, yeah. No one thought it would fall to the basement. And look at where it is now. I mean, it's not even discussed, right? So I think that a lot of these...
I mean, they just folded their tent.
Yeah. So yeah, it's... I think that a lot of these carriers are learning from the mistakes here and saying, you know, geez, we need to be at the at the forefront of this. Otherwise, we risk falling in the same path that BlackBerry went.
Joe, what do you think are Microsoft's odds of making it over here and being a real competitor? I mean, they are really nowhere, way down in the numbers in terms of wireless penetration, their Windows Phone. Can they make it? You know, now they're joined at the hip with Nokia. Can they catch up with Google and Apple on this front?
What Ariel said was really astute. This is the beginning. If you think about it, Verizon Wireless said, you know, they have over 100 million subscribers, and they're the second largest wireless carrier in the U.S. Well, there are more than a couple hundred million people in the U.S. There are a lot of people who still don't have smartphones, and there's a lot of market left to get. America doesn't like just having two choices in general. Apple and Android is a really strong core of this business, but there's a lot of headroom for it. And, you know, there's an identity choice for people who want to be with the sort of more fringe and not as well-known or established products. So there's an opportunity there. The other opportunity is that Microsoft really owns enterprise at this point. If you look around, I'm looking around the NPR studios here in New York, and it's a lot of PCs.
You're talking and on the business front. Oh, they're huge, yeah. There. The question of who's going to drive things, we'll look at that. Stand by. I want to get a call right here. Talk about wireless connection. Let's go to Saudi Arabia, Riyadh, and Abdullah is calling. Hi, Abdullah. Thanks for calling from Saudi Arabia. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you? I'm indeed calling from Saudi Arabia. I'm out a coffee shop on the streets of Riyadh, and I thought it was good for the shoot today. I'm out here in Riyadh doing business here locally as well as conducting my business back in Boston.
Abdullah, you're breaking up a little bit. We see the strength and the weakness of wireless right there. But standing outside a coffee shop in Riyadh, listening to On Point and NPR in Saudi Arabia, we love that. And on that wireless device, yeah, the voice breaks up a little bit. But there's Abdullah, who's doing business in Saudi Arabia and back in the States simultaneously, David, and talking with us and making it all happen. There we are, mobile computing, front and center.
Yeah, and it's going to be more and more like this. You know, you're going to have, as you know, previous caller said, you have your office on your device, and to your point, you're seeing the strength and the weakness of it. Is that you know, being that we are at the infancy, yes, someone can get the show and stream it on their phone, but also you know,
in Riyadh or wherever,
anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you're getting choppiness from a you know, voice over IP call. Mm-hmm. You know, these are things that are only going to improve as there gets to be more and more bandwidth. And really, that's an infrastructure play that the carriers need to do. They need to continually, and you see this pushing. It used to be 2G, then it's 3G, then it's 4G. They're continually pushing the bandwidth capabilities of their networks.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the giant mega billion dollar deals this week on the mobile communication, mobile computing front, the explosion in mobile computing, the lifestyle and spending changes that come with it, the always-on connectedness, and the competition there, Microsoft, you name it, Google, Apple. Joe Brown is with us from New York, New York editor of Wired Magazine. David Gersoff Richard is with me in the studio, professor of social media marketing at Emerson College, founder of Big Fish Marketing and Communications Firm. Boy, a lot of people pitching in here, Joe, David. Colin says on this, you know, what's it going to be question, says, my iPhone has replaced my phone. My tablet has replaced my bookcase, but my desktop is where I do my real work for my real job. I'm connected to my machine with both the tablet and phone, but it will not replace it, much like a motorcycle and car will not do the work of my truck. There's that. Maybe it's all going to be there, David, or do we somehow get wooed, even for our serious work, into a fully mobile world eventually?
I think that there's always going to be a differentiator between work and play and the devices that we use for both. They are certainly coming together.
How do you draw that line? I mean, I think about how much work I'm doing on my mobile at this point. Certain kinds of, when I sit down to really type something up, tends to be a desktop. But I don't know, maybe a better keyboard comes along for the mobile. You name it.
It's one of the behavioral challenges that we're facing is when to disconnect, when to turn off. I mean, it used to be very easy to go someplace where there wasn't connectivity. Or your battery would die halfway through the day. But you know the devices are staying connected in further proximity to where you live, and they're staying charged much longer. So it becomes a personal decision and almost a struggle that you have to everyone has to kind of come to terms with and figure out when to turn off.
I guess we don't have to look at it in winner-loser zero-sum game terms here, desktop versus mobile, but that doesn't mean mobile's not exploding. When somebody talked about wetware, and there's a tweet here on Twitter for us that says, soon we won't even need to be touching, holding phones. Just thinking about calling some will trigger it. And I think you've got one there as well, David.
Yeah, this is great. It says, the response to that is, this blows the notion of drunk dialing wide open.
Wetware, embedded mobile, think about something and boom, they are in your head. They are on the phone, quote unquote.
Yeah, you know, I see this with the college students that I teach. They're young, they're getting out there, they're of drinking age, and you know, there's this notion of drunk dialing, of you know, getting on your phone and calling someone in the middle of the night. Well, what if it's you know, more than that, right? If you're thinking about them and it's an embedded technology wetware that way, all of a sudden you're connected to them in the middle of the night, and who knows, right? So it's the imagination can take you all over the place with the future of mobile.
Joe Brown, where do you see the migration of expectations taking us here? A new generation is doing so much on mobile. Does that push the big companies to further untether, to make more and more capacity available without anything plugged in?
Absolutely. And the limiting factor right now, I mean, it's not that there's no demand for more powerful mobile devices. It's something that David touched on before. It's battery life. And as much as battery life is improving, we're still really limited by chemistry, you know, how many electrons a lithium ion or lithium polymer cell can hold and power what kind of a device. And, you know, you can obviously make a big enough battery to power almost anything, but can you put that in your pocket is the other question. So as we drive forward, right now we're really seeing limiting technology for powerful, powerful portable computers being how long you can keep them powered. And that's the thing that is really keeping the desktop relevant. And I mean, if you think about in several decades, are we going to be seeing more people using their tablets to be doing professional work? Well, I mean, I wonder if the question is whether a tablet is going to be the most mobile piece of technology we have. I don't know if it's wetware. Maybe it's something we haven't even thought of yet.
I mean,
that's the sort of exciting thing right now.
Yeah, David, we've got all this watch stuff to be on your arm stuff coming in. I mean, we think of a watch, but maybe that's the wrong way to think of it. Maybe it's more like NFL quarterbacks with their little data pad stretching along their forearm. I don't know. What's coming there?
Yeah, there's all these things coming down the pipeline, and it's how integrate them into our daily lives and society. The watch is a perfect example. There's Pebble out there. Samsung's going to be
Pebble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is going to be releasing a watch pretty soon. And you know, I was just talking with a bunch of school teachers, and you know, the technology policies they have on school campuses is, you know, you can't have a phone, but you can have a laptop.
And
on campus.
What kind of campus? High school, junior high, elementary,
public school campuses. So there's a lot of these.
But
schools.
You're talking not college.
No, just okay. So we're talking
because they don't want all
school.
That interaction, distraction,
exactly.
Sexting, whatever.
So the laptop is seen as something you write a paper on. The phone is seen as something that, you know, can be distracting or used as a cheating tool.
And that's excludable still.
Exactly. But, you know, these new wearable devices, the teachers don't know what to do about them. A kid could wear a watch into class and suddenly get texted, you know, answers to test questions. And they don't might not know to look for it.
Well, I mean, you can't even play the trivia games anymore, right? Because everybody can answer everything right off the thing in their hand. Andy in Mansfield, Massachusetts. Andy, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. I'll tell you how it's changed for me. It's changed the ability to share experiences. I'm a skydiver, and my girlfriend hardly even likes to get on a plane, let alone get out of one at altitude.
Okay.
But it's not that unusual for me to just see an unbelievable sky in front of me and shoot a picture out the plane on my ride out to altitude and send that along for, you know, a couple minutes before I jump out. When I get down, she sends me a picture of the great party that she's at yeah. Dragon Con in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And, you know, just this past weekend, I had this great time up in Maine skydiving and partying. And she had this great time in Atlanta partying with all of her friends and all of Dragon Con people. And we shared that experience. It's like we both had a great experience. We've been almost together, even though we're thousands and thousands of miles apart.
Andy, do take my advice and skydive into her immediate proximity sometime soon. But still, we get it, and that's really cool. I mean, here we are, David, people, and Andy's got a very dramatic example. He's a skydiver, but people sort of living, sharing multiple lives in real time. I feel like I'm starting to understand this experience. It's yours, but I, you know, here's an image from a friend or a family member of what they're doing right now, and I'm here, but I'm also vicariously enjoying, understanding a little bit better that.
Yeah, so this connected world that mobile is opening up, it's amazing. You know, it's you know, moms can suddenly, you know, stay in touch with their older children who might not want to always like be heard from, right? Or, mm-hmm. There was this nicety before all of mobile was there is not being able to be found, and there's almost not an excuse for it anymore. It's okay. So you have a mobile phone, you have probably some other device like a tablet or a laptop. There's no reason why you shouldn't be connected, and that's what a lot of people's attitudes are developing towards one another.
Beth in Newton, Massachusetts. Beth, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I love your show. I just wanted to make a couple of points, and I apologize if I'm repeating what other people said because I just tuned in. First, for some of us who are self-employed, a cell phone with email is an essential, and it's also wonderful for parents whose kids went away to college because you can FaceTime them and talk to them.
Sure.
But a more interesting story is a friend of mine who is also self-employed, and he's in the financial industry, so networking is particularly important to him. And I spent the day with him on the day of the Egyptian Spring, and he's an Egyptian national.
Yeah.
And as a matter of principle, he's at that time, he said, I refuse to carry cell phones, I refuse to be connected. But he wasn't considering the fact that on that day, NPR tried to contact him through his website by emailing him and calling his office to interview him about the Egyptian Spring, and he missed that opportunity because he wasn't plugged in. And for him, that was really a valuable, you know, networking opportunity.
Yeah, networking, to say the least. To have his say about Tahrir Square, what a big day. I mean, it highlights what happens when technology changes. And maybe here, and if you're not accessible wirelessly, mobily, in some ways, you don't exist in our fast-paced, okay, he's not there. We'll talk to somebody else. Beth, thank you for that. Joe in Wausau, Wisconsin. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi. I think that eventually the Windows Phone is actually going to overtake Apple in the mobile market. And I see that because, Apple's lost its creative engine, and already Apple devices are becoming antiquated in feeling. They feel flat and one-dimensional. They can't multitask. And they really haven't come up with anything innovative in the last year or two. And Windows really has. Their marketing strategy is strong. And I think over the next few years, as people become comfortable with the new Windows platform, it's really going to take off. And unless Apple gets a new creative engine and comes up with something innovative, they're going to fall to the wayside just like the BlackBerry did a couple of years ago.
Really interesting. I mean, it is perpetual competition here. Apple was a huge forerunner, certainly pushed the frontier forward. But, Joe, what about it? Has Microsoft got the platform, the chops, even from its lagging position on this front right now, do you think, to come up and take it back from Apple?
Tom, the sky is falling. Everything's going to be changed and different. I mean, you know,
I don't know what you mean, Joe.
I mean that, you know, Right now, one of the things that mobile communications is doing really well is allowing us to communicate really quickly about things that are just happening and not really seen through yet. And this is happening a lot on the internet, where a lot of us are getting our opinions, and I'm guilty of spreading this stuff as much as anybody else. But the truth is that we can't say that Apple has lost its creative engine. They lost one person, and it's a big loss.
You're talking Steve Jobs here.
I'm talking Steve Jobs, and I think that's what our caller was talking about as well. And yeah, you know, iOS has gotten a little bit dusty, but next week they're going to unveil iOS 7 in its final build, which is the new operating system for the iPhone that's going to look completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to be the change that everybody has been waiting for and signaling? Probably not, but it is a step forward. Does Windows Phone, are they going to make Apple the next BlackBerry? I think likely not, at least not very soon. Windows Phone is an excellent operating system, but it also has some multitasking issues. It also has some marketing issues, even though our caller was saying they have the right marketing strategy, and I'd love to hear what David has to say about that. The reality is that I think Apple right now is in a very, very strong position for the next several years, and the lesson of BlackBerry is one that's not going to be lost on them, because BlackBerry really did have a golden opportunity that it squandered.
I mean, David, there is no permanent lead position here. There's nothing fixed. I mean, I guess everything can change over time, and you know, if we're still at the beginning of this move, sure, that's the way the world works. Microsoft's got a lot of history. Maybe they can jump right off that desktop and be a leader at some point on this front.
It's fascinating to look at what goes into making a consumer jump from one platform to another. There's a number of hurdles there. One is, is this an easy platform for me to learn very quickly? Like, going from an iPhone or an Android device to a Windows phone, there's a learning curve there, right? Then there's the question of all the apps, everything that I've put on my phone. You spend so much time as a consumer, customizing a device to fit your mobile lifestyle. You have to start from scratch when you jump from platform to platform. And yes, some things may migrate. The Windows or any of these platforms may make it easier for you to migrate some of your data. But there's still that, there's a learning curve and there's a cost involved. These devices are not cheap right now.
No.
They're going to be in the future. But right now, there's a lot of hurdles to get consumers to jump from one platform to another. So I don't see it happening as the caller had predicted, that quickly, but it may happen over time.
What about the security front, Joe? Is mobile more or less or equally secure or insecure as, hardwired desktop, let's say?
Well, I hate to give you the sort of liberal arts answer, but it depends, right? One of the things that mobile does afford you is location. And it's one of the great benefits of working on a wireless device is that you have that extra access of information. In addition to knowing what time it is and what you're doing, your device knows where you are. And so that enables a lot of the push notifications and deals that the previous callers and David were talking about.
The store that says, walk right in, you're standing in front of a bargain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if that information is compromised, you have a real situation, right? People know where you are. That is something that also happens when you're on a landline because you're at home.
Mm-hmm.
But on either one, I think you have a sense of security and lack thereof, right? Like the mobile phone allows you to have a lot of – the apps are allowing you to have encryption that you can put on your own device yourself so that you can really make sure your communications are as secure as possible. But encryption can be broken, and as we've heard with this Prism situation, people are listening to everything. I don't know that security is something that is really so much in our future 100%. The more information we put out there in any situation, it could be your mail, it could be an email, the less security you have. And so I think there is some caution to be taken there.
I mean, David, we've got listeners saying, look, we're up in arms over the NSA's program, Prism, and government snooping, but then we sort of give it all away. Do we give... I guess the added factor here is location. Mm. And what about accessibility or the ease of cracking into our data itself, mobile versus hardwired?
Well, so there's a couple of things here. First of all is your point on giving it away. We have become trained now to get things, apps and programs for free. Access to social media platforms for free in exchange for information, and that then we put onto our mobile devices. And, you know, we've had in the past some challenges, security challenges with just the systems that we were using, credit cards and social security numbers, right? So we had this identity theft. Well, imagine, you know, the sort of, you know, when you talk about, you know, the future predictions of how connected we are, imagine like the future problems when your phone is also your wallet, right? Mm. Identity theft, you know, if someone gets into your phone, would pale in comparison because, yeah, they would get all your charge cards, but then they get access to everything else. They could literally control your life and shut your life down, not you, your biological life, but, you know, all of your connections and everything would just could go dark.
Not your biological life, you say, but what was it a month ago they came out with this thing saying you could hack into a pacemaker and boop, there you are. Who knows?
Maybe even.
I mean, Brave New World, this presumption that we'll be surrounded by data, information, and power to do things, clearly growing like crazy, and these companies jumping on that in a very big way. David Gersoff-Richard with Emerson College and Big Fish, it is always great to have you. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Always good to be here. Thank you.
And Joe Brown, New York editor at Wired Magazine. Joe, thank you for joining us today.
Tom, thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you. Listeners, you can continue the conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Emily Alphen Johnson, Catherine Brewer, Julie Jopp, Sam Gail Rosen, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, James Ross, and Dean Russell, with help from Abigail Collins, Austin Federa, and Emma Jean Weinstein. Our senior producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.